When it comes to investing, retirement, taxes, healthcare, and estate planning, the decisions you make today can greatly affect the quality of life for you and your loved ones tomorrow. What you need is straight and unbiased information on the most important issues you'll face when planning for your retirement and financial future. Good news! You found the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout. Grant is the founder of Dorhout Retirement Services, and he's been guiding people financially and into retirement for nearly 20 years. So get ready for an hour of the most comprehensive financial information on the radio. It's time for the Retirement Blueprint. And now, here are your hosts, Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shea.
Thank you so much. Good morning and welcome to the Retirement Blueprint, the show that gives you the straight talk and honest answers you need to reach your wealth management and retirement goals through smart investing and careful planning. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the first 5 years of retirement and money moves that you absolutely must make. Also, big retirement obstacles you must overcome, and then creating a reliable retirement paycheck. And Grant, if we get to it today, we tend to bite off more than we can chew. We're going to try to talk about avoiding some tax bombs. My name is Jeff Shade, and I'm just here to ask the questions, of course, but the words of wisdom is solid advice. Well, they come from Grant Dorhout, founder and wealth advisor of Dorhout Retirement Services right here in Omaha. And Grant, how's this Saturday morning treating you, my friend?
You know, it's a great morning. I'm excited for these topics as usual. Excited to be here with you. Excited for spring. I'm just excited about a lot of things. We had the Masters a couple weeks ago. That really gets me energized for spring. But yeah, I'm excited for today's show. And hopefully we didn't bite off more than we can chew. But history has told us we probably did. We'll just see how it goes.
Well, we've done that in the past. Obviously, we're optimistic here. But, you know, we get going with a topic and then we find that really it's going to take a lot more time than we originally planned. But as you said, we do have a good show lined up for the folks today. We have a lot of valuable information. So once again, hold on to your seats here. And a couple of things. Remember that telephone number. It's 402-281-0750. If you hear anything that piques your interest today, give us a call at 402-281-0750. You can also use that to get your no cost, no obligation retirement blueprint. And of course, we do love to hear from you, our listeners. If you've got a topic you'd like us to talk about, call it into 402-281-0750, or you can get it to us by going to the contact page at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. Okay, Grant, let's get rolling here. The first 5 years of retirement money moves that you absolutely must make. Now, I would think in the first, probably the first month or so of retirement in this sort of maiden voyage, you want to take a look at your expenses and you want to analyze your budget. It's not something generally that you get right off the bat, is it?
No, this is kind of a complicated part. And it might sound really, really simple, just figuring out what your budget is and figuring out what your retirement spending is going to be. But I tell people all the time, if you're making, let's say $100,000, $120,000 a year, $150,000, it doesn't matter what the number is. What you got to figure out is what expenses are coming out of that from a tax perspective. You got to figure out what's coming out of that for your retirement, figure out what's coming out for healthcare, and then change it up for what total expenses are going to come out of your retirement check, and figure out really what your net is going to be needed in retirement. And don't shortchange yourself. If you're making 120 and net take home is, say, I'm going to make up a number here, Jeff, but let's say 7,000 a month or 84,000 a year, don't plan on, if you have Social Security equaling $58,000, don't plan on that $58,000 being enough. It won't be. I can promise you that. You shouldn't have it actually be enough, because if you're going to retire and then decrease your actual spendable income by $26,000 in this scenario, that's a recipe for disaster, either from a healthcare standpoint or a health standpoint, or financially. If you plan on 58 and you end up spending 84, it puts more stress on your portfolio. Plan for the 84. And I would even go beyond that, because most people want to travel a little bit more. So plan on probably 90,000 instead of 84, and then really start working your income plan from there. But don't plan on a big decrease in your spending habits once you hit retirement. In my experience, it won't happen.
Yeah, and that's a big misconception I think that people have, is that they're going to spend less in retirement. But when you really look at it on paper, many times, as you said, you do spend more, especially during the first period of retirement. We call those the go-go years, where you try to get a few bucket list things out of the way. So the first thing that you absolutely must do in the first few months of retirement, and certainly in the first 5 years, is to plan a budget and see what it really costs to be you. Next one, I think, is to refine your withdrawal strategies. Your withdrawal strategies, I would think, are going to be a little bit different in the beginning of retirement than in the middle of retirement, and especially towards the end. Am I right or wrong about that one, Grant?
I believe you're exactly right in a multitude of ways. Part of it is, yes, as we get older, there's a natural progression. You alluded to this. You know, you got your go-go years at the beginning, and then you typically have your slow-go years, and everyone's going to be different how long they can make those go-go years go. You know, if you retire at 65 or 67, your go-go period might be from 65 until 74 or 77. Either way is fine. You just have to plan for it accordingly. And then slow go, you just stop doing as much. You know, maybe you just don't have the desire to anymore. And then your no-go years, maybe that desire is completely gone, or maybe health prevents you from being able to do that. So I just put a retirement plan together for a family where we actually planned for, they knew, okay, this is where we know we want our go-go years to go, and we'll go 5 years beyond that. Just in case, hey, you know what, maybe it's 5 years more. But then once we hit the slow-go years, we actually planned on a decrease in needed income. Now, if we kept it going, it was still going to be okay, but we decreased it based off of what we thought their slow-go years would start at. I would highly, highly recommend, do not just rely on keeping your money as it is in your 401k, in your IRA, in your Roth IRA, in your investment account. Don't just keep everything status quo and rely on the 4% rule. I've gone through this many, many times with hundreds, maybe even thousands of people now, especially when you consider how many people listen. But when you look at the 4% rule, you have to know that you are bringing in a sequence of returns risk that could completely derail your retirement. It might work out just fine. You also might derail your retirement. And the only time we're going to know is about 10, 12, maybe 15 years into your retirement, if it was a horrible idea or if it's going to work out for you. So I wouldn't just rely on the 4% rule. Things like that, that are standard, that are kind of cookie cutter, those types of plans, in my opinion, is leaving people open for a lot of potential issues down the road. And then by the time we find out it's an issue, then it might be too late. I would encourage everyone, do the math. If you don't know how to do the math, find someone that can to make sure that you're fine beyond just using that cookie cutter 4% rule.
We're talking about money moves that you absolutely must make in the first 5 years of retirement with Grant Dorhout here of Dorhout Retirement Services. Next one is to revisit your investment strategy and your holdings. And I think in the beginning, most baby boomers are probably a little bit heavy in stock, but that should change, I would think, as you progress into retirement.
Yeah, you absolutely need to change it. A simple rule, you could use the rule of 100 or the rule of 110, where you take, you know, 110 minus your age. So if you're 65, well, that would suggest that you should probably have about 45% at risk in stocks and bonds. And then, you know, 65% of it should be in a more reliable source where you can rely on it for income. Now, that's another one that's oversimplification. That'll just give listeners, okay, well, hey, how am I sitting? I'm 65 years old. Oh, I have 100% of my money that's in stocks and ETFs and mutual funds. Maybe that's a little too much. Maybe we need to balance this out a little bit more just in case we have another stock market downturn that we've seen recently in 2022. But what if it's something like 2008? So revisiting those investment strategy and holdings, the way that I do it is I actually work it backwards. I'm going to work the income. I'm going to say, okay, I need to have X amount over here reliable. I'm not going to use the rule of 110. If someone's 65 and they, you know, that rule of 110 would say that 45% in stocks. Well, if I work it backwards and I can keep 50 or 55% in stocks and mutual funds and ETFs, if I can do that, we want to do that. We want to keep more money in the market if possible, but we let the income need determine what that is. So it is a little bit more complicated scenario than just that 4% rule. It's a lot more complicated right. than just, well, whatever your age is, have that much at risk. You got to do the math to make these plans as efficient as possible.
And there are five things money can do for you. We've talked about this before: cash flow, security, growth, liquidity, and tax savings. And I think in the first 5 years of retirement, and certainly as you progress through retirement, typically you gradually want to shift from a growth to an income-focused approach. And again, we're talking about these things that you want to do here in the first 5 years of retirement. Next one on the list, this one's really, really important, Grant, and that is to review your health insurance situation.
Yeah, you have to do this annually, actually. And you really should check out your Medicare supplements or your Medicare Advantage programs and your prescription drug plans. Your prescription drug plan and the Advantage programs, that you have an annual enrollment period that you can actually revisit what you have for the following year based on changes that have happened inside of a formulary at a specific company. So you can do that every year between October 15 and December 7 for a January 1 effective date. That's the first thing. Second thing is on your Medicare supplement, if you have a Medicare supplement instead of the Advantage program, you're going to want to look at, okay, do I have a Plan G? If I do, okay, what's the going rate? You know, what's other companies charging out there? If you're paying $200 a month, for instance, and there's several other companies that are charging $160 or $150 per month, which is likely, well, then that might be a situation where you want to change over to a different Medicare supplement. And you can do that based off of your health. If you're healthy enough, you can go ahead and make that change. Another thing on the health insurance situation is more long term.
Right.
And looking at, okay, what's my situation if a serious event happens? What if cognitive impairment, or we can't perform 2 out of 6 activities of daily living? What if we have a severe stroke and then all of a sudden we just need help in the home or in a nursing home moving forward? How are we going to pay for these things? A lot of times, Jeff, what I found actually is when I say those things in that way about long-term care, people hear me say, purchase long-term care insurance. That couldn't be further from the truth. Right. I'm actually saying we just have to plan for it. Some people determine that, hey, you know what? I want to offload some of this responsibility to an insurance carrier. Right. That's fine if that's the way that they want to do the planning once they get all of the information. Some other people say, you know what? I'm going to protect my assets in different ways. I'm going to do different planning inside of my estate in order to cover for this long-term care potential event. And either way is fine with me, but just making sure that people get all of the information, knowing what's best for their situation, making a well-informed decision is the best way to go with your health insurance situation in retirement.
Yeah, and health insurance is one of the biggest expenses that you'll have in retirement in addition to taxes. Mm-hmm. So very important to get that right. There are several ways to pay for long-term care. And once again, I would say that if people have questions about that, 402-281-0750 is the number to call. Ask Grant about your health insurance situation. Okay, next up on the list, things to do in the first 5 years of retirement, Grant, update your legacy planning and sit down with a pro. I think this is pretty important too.
You got to do this annually. I really believe you have to just review it annually. And this is something that we would highly encourage for everyone. Just look at your trust. Make sure that the wording is correct. And if you don't know, we actually have certain trust services that we interact with that we can have them just review it and make sure that the wording is exactly what you want for your plan moving forward. If you have trusts, if you have wills, make sure that that will is updated. I just had someone last week, they came in and they had a little bit of a change. Well, pretty big change, actually, Jeff, where they no longer wanted to leave any money to their kids. They wanted to leave it all to their grandkids. Well, there's serious trust work that needs to be done in that situation. If you have a serious event like that that you want to change, don't just change the name beneficiary on your annuities or on your life insurance or on your investment accounts or on your transfer on death accounts or any of those. Make sure you go a little deeper and make sure that you're not leaving $300,000 to a 16-year-old if you're going to leave that to a grandkid. Make sure that you're not going to hurt them by leaving them this money. So certain legacy planning, there's a ton that can be done and there's a ton that can change. Just make sure that it's updated. It's really pretty simple. Do it once a year.
Yeah, and some people neglect even that they have as many children as they have, and you've talked about that before. Is it your parents even forgot that you were born? You weren't even in the estate plan for a while there.
Yeah, it was actually, I think I was 17 or 18, and they had told me that yeah, actually, maybe last year we figured out, wait, we didn't even get Grant in the will yet. And then, I mean, that's maybe a little bit long. It's kind of a funny story that I don't want any of our clients to have. But if you're wondering, hey, do we have all of our kids in there? Let's just review it and make sure you have everyone taken care of for when you're gone. And that way there's no questions. Because that's one of the worst things that we can do, Jeff, really, is leave a question and leave it up to debate in the courts, or, you know, leave it for family infighting. If you're just very, very clear as to what your wishes are, then hopefully there's no issue between your kids after you're gone about the money that you're going to leave them.
And I bet you were on pretty good behavior after that when you found out you weren't in the will for a while. I mean, was that a side effect of finding out you weren't in the will? I'll be a good boy. Just put me in the will.
You know, I actually didn't even follow up on it until I got in this business. I started doing my parents' planning with retirement. Yeah. Then it's like, okay, well, let's check the documents. Let's make sure everything's in there. And then I remembered that story. And then they did have me in there at that point. So we're all good.
Well, Grant, I think based on our conversation here today about the things that people need to do in the first 5 years of retirement, that some of our listeners may have some questions about this. So we're offering a no cost, no obligation, and no judgment opportunity for you to sit down with Grant on a one-on-one basis and get your questions answered that'll put you on a confident path towards a retirement in which you not only survive, but you also thrive. We're calling this the Retirement Blueprint, and again, no cost and no obligation for this. You can get it today by calling 402-281-0750. It's 402-281-0750. I know it's the weekend right now, but go ahead, make that call today. Leave your name, your telephone number. Lisa will give you a call back during the week and set you up with an appointment with Grant to get those questions answered. And again, it's not going to cost you a dime, and there is no obligation. Nobody's going to try to sell you anything. It's just a casual conversation between you and Grant to get your questions answered. Once again, that telephone number for your complimentary retirement blueprint, 402-281-0750. You can also request it online at DorHoutRetirementServices.com. DORHOUT RetirementServices.com.
Want more strategies to support the quality of life you want for 30 plus years? Stick around. There's more Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout in just a moment. You can't start a trip you've never taken without a plan, and you can't start your retirement journey without a comprehensive plan to get there safely. To request your no-cost, no-obligation Dorhout Retirement Roadmap, call 402-281-0750 or request it online at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. Now, back to more of Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shade.
We so much appreciate you joining us here for the Retirement Blueprint each and every Saturday here on News Talk 1290 COIL. We're on the air for you every week for your fiscal fitness and your financial education. Again, if you've missed any part of the program, we're also a podcast. Go to wherever you get your podcast, search for the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout. You'll find this show and many of our past shows so you can stay on top of your journey towards a confident retirement. Okay, Grant, let's dive into our next segment here. These are big retirement obstacles that you can overcome leading up to retirement. Number one, no room in the budget to save. I've been guilty of this as well, too, as a young man. I'd look at this and go, well, how can I put any money into a 401k or save anything? I'm spending every dime that I have to live. And many times, I mean, this is a problem, but you can make room in the budget if you sort of separate your wants from your needs, I think.
You're 100% right. And that's that I think is probably actually a more difficult approach, is separating wants from needs, because often those lines can become blurred if we're not careful. Okay. So if you actually just, instead of thinking of retirement as an afterthought, we just look at it like, okay, you know what? I'm going to split it. I'm going to say at the beginning of the month, at every single paycheck, I'm not going to have that much. I'm going to put, you know, 5%, 2%. 1%, 0.5%. I don't care where you start, just start in terms of your 401k match. If they match 3% and you can't afford to put 3% in, or you feel like you can't afford to put 3% in, start with your baby steps. Just go with 0.5% or 0.25%. It does not matter what the number is. But then beyond that, here is a little known secret that can really help every single person that's listening to this and their kids. If you just every single Friday or every single day, I actually have a savings account that every single day, a certain amount goes into that account every single day of the week, every single week of the year. Okay. If you just do $20 a day, $20, $30, $40 a day, if you say $20, I'm not going to go out to eat today at all. I'm going to make myself a sandwich instead. And every single day I do that, that $20 a day or $10 a day. And you'd be surprised how quickly this money mounts up if you start just thinking of it in the smallest increment possible. Don't think of it as $6,000 a year or $500 a month. Don't think of it that way. Think of it as, okay, if I do 20, can I do $20 today? Mm-hmm. If you do that, you will find your way into saving a heck of a lot more money in a much easier way. I promise you, you will not find it burdensome to actually put away $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 per year if you just break it down to, okay, I'm going to do $20 a day.
Yeah, and a lot of people roll through Starbucks. I mean, you know, a latte, you're talking about $6-$7 mm-hmm. plus tip and so forth. If you skip that and you had the coffee at McDonald's, actually, I prefer mm-hmm. McDonald's coffee. I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm not a coffee connoisseur. Yeah, maybe it's $1.50 for the coffee versus $7.50. You're saving $6 a day times, let's say, five. That's 30, 60, that's $120 a month. Make it $150 a month on the coffee. You'd be surprised mm-hmm. at how fast that can add up. And before you know it, I mean, if you start early enough, you can build up $1 million. We call this the million-dollar latte story. So, but there are many other ways. I wanted a condominium on the water when I was young in New York. I didn't need it, but I wanted it, so I went ahead and did it. You know, I wanted my regular Honda that I could go to work in, but I also wanted a 65 Chevrolet Impala convertible, which I got. You know, it only took me a few years, about 50, to separate my wants from my needs, so I think that's the first one. Make room in your budget to save, and if you can, make it automatic. Next obstacle is your employer doesn't offer a 401k or you work for yourself. If that's the situation, how can you simulate a 401k?
Yeah, so this is really easy as well. If you're self-employed, you could do what's called a self-employment pension. You can put up to 25% of your income with limitations into this self-employment pension, the SEP, as we say. But then also you could do traditional IRA, or you could do a Roth IRA. You could do up to $7,000 right now in 2024 if you're prior to age 50, $8,000 if you're older than 50. So if you're looking at these, you got to be subject to income limitations on the Roth IRA as well. This would be really easy. If you're making less than, well, let's say $146,000 is the number for a individual and $230,000 for a married couple who's filing jointly. If you're making less than that, you can contribute into a Roth IRA up to $7,000 per year. Well, this is pretty simple. How am I going to do that? How am I going to put $7,000 per year in there? I'm going to do $20 every single day. I'm going to put $20 a day into this particular Roth account. And I'm going to build that up. And then if I just do that at the end of the year, I will have put the $7,000 in there. So you don't have to have a 401k at your employer to force you to do it. You might have to have a little bit more discipline, but there's definitely ways that you can back your way into it. And it doesn't have to be a one check at the end of the year before December 31 or before April of the following year for the previous year. You don't have to do it in one check. Just do it systematically. Do it every single day if you can. Can't do it every day, do it every week. If you can't do it every week, well, then do it every other week. Do it the 1st and the 15th and just break it down to the smallest increment possible. It'd be a lot easier for you to save.
We're talking about retirement obstacles that you must face with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services. Next one on the list, Grant, is changing jobs. Now, the days of working for one employer for 30, 35 years, I think are pretty much gone. I think the stat that I read is over about a 35-year period, many people will have anywhere from 5 to 7 jobs. So it does present an obstacle insofar as, let's say that you've got a 401k. The obstacle that is presented here is, what do you do with that 401k? I guess you could leave it where it is. You could transfer it to a new employer's 401k plan. You could cash it out. So what would you tell mm-hmm. our people listening to us if you have that choice to make? How would you determine what the right choice is?
Well, the right choice, in my opinion, is definitely not to cash it out, because if you're prior to 59 and a half, you're going to have a 10% IRS penalty right off the bat, and then you get to pay taxes on the money you cashed out. So
right.
Although that might be tempting to do, you see this pot of money, this $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. Oh, if I can do that, then I can buy this car, or I can do whatever with it. I would highly suggest rolling over your 401k. Now, you have to be very specific in what your needs or wants are going to be from this. How tight are you on your budget, for one, will tell you how you're going to want to do that rollover in terms of the 401k. Most of the time, we would suggest that you roll this 401k into a traditional IRA, you get control of it, and then you can actually invest it the way you want. There's a lot more options typically outside of a 401k than there are inside of a 401k. So that's typically the way that we would suggest it. However, if someone is in a situation where, you know what, in the next 5 years, it's a little uncertain, I might need to access some of that money, it may benefit you more to roll it over into your new company's 401k. That way you can borrow from that 401k and not have any negative consequences from accessing that money. So depending on what your budget looks like, depending on what your outlook looks like in the next 5 years, it might be roll it to a traditional IRA. It might be roll it to your 401k to borrow from it. But I would say almost never would we say cash it out.
And of course, I'm speaking from experience on the show, Grant. I've made every mistake possible. So anyway, as I said, I speak from experience. You're making these mistakes. Next one is no money for emergencies. That is an obstacle that a lot of people have to face. And I'm surprised at the number of people. There was a shocking stat that said something like 40-50% of people in the country, maybe even more than that, would have trouble covering a $1,000 emergency.
Yeah, it is sad that we've gotten to this point of hand to mouth, so to speak, with our income. Part of it's not people's fault, but it's just our job market and just the expenses and whatnot. But actually, only about 48% of Americans say that they have enough savings to cover 3 months worth of expenses. 22% of people, one in four approximately, have no savings whatsoever. Wow. It's really a negative situation that we've gotten ourselves into that we have to really rein ourselves in from a spending standpoint. I've heard plenty of people say, hey, I'm broke, but then they have no problem spending $200 a week at restaurants. Yeah. And that's part of the problem. When you're eating out, I believe the number is it costs approximately $13 to $14 per meal. But if you eat at home, it costs about $3.50 per meal. That's the last one that I had heard. That's a big deal. So I know we want to go have fun and we want to do things with our friends and we want all of these things. However, we have to be aware that if we say, you know what, if I was eating out twice a day, that's on average $26 to $28 per day. If I said, you know what, twice per day, 5 days a week, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give myself 2 days a week on the weekend that I still do that. 5 days a week, I make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which is way less than $3.50. But let's say I have $3.50 that I spend on those two meals every day, Monday through Friday. You know what I just saved, Jeff? I just saved $20 a day. And we were just talking about the fact that that's a way that you can actually get $7,000 into a 401k or into an IRA or a Roth IRA. Well, start before you do that into the Roth IRA, before you do it into the IRA, you have to have your emergency fund set up. And if it takes not eating out at all and eating some peanut butter and jelly for a couple months, have that emergency fund because you don't want your fallback to be go to your credit card.
We're talking with Grant Dorhout here at Dorhout Retirement Services. We're talking about retirement obstacles that you may face. If you've got questions about our topic today, maybe you want to get in and sit down with Grant and, you know, hash it over a little bit. Find ways to overcome these obstacles. We're offering a no-cost, no-obligation, no-judgment retirement blueprint with Grant. The number to call to get yours this weekend, 402-281-0750. Make that call this weekend. Leave your name, your number. Lisa will call you back during the week and set up an appointment for a conversation with Grant. Once again, 402-281-0750. It's not going to cost you a dime. You can also request your plan online at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. That's D-O-R-H-O-U-T, RetirementServices.com.
Want more talk about sustaining your wealth and thriving in a retirement that could last 30 plus years? Stay tuned for more Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout after this. Ready to climb a mountain of financial know-how? Good, because it's time for more Retirement Blueprint with your financial Sherpas, Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shea.
We so much appreciate you making us part of your weekend. Of course, you're listening to the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout. Happy you could join us this week. Of course, we're here for you every week on the radio and 1290 COIL for your fiscal fitness and your financial education. Once again, questions or comments about our show, the telephone number to call, 402-281-0750. Use that to request your no-cost and your no-obligation Dorhout Retirement Blueprint. In this segment, Grant, I want to talk about how to create a reliable retirement paycheck. And I think that's probably a big obstacle that people need to face. You know, when you're working, you get a regular paycheck. You go from this accumulation mode to what I'll call the distribution phase. When you're no longer getting a paycheck, you've got to rely on savings to create that paycheck. So basically, that is what I want to talk about in this particular segment. And I think a lot of people say, well, I'm going to get Social Security. That should be enough. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen for the majority of people. Of course, we have some people that can live just on Social Security, but that's the exception. It's definitely not the rule. I would highly encourage people not to rely on conventional wisdom when they're claiming Social Security. And I say wisdom tongue in cheek, because some of it is very suspect. Some people just say, oh, just wait until 70 and don't take your Social Security benefits until then. Well, they haven't considered what the longevity in their home has been, what their family history has been. They haven't considered what other assets are. They haven't considered anything when just saying, take it at 70. And the other person that says, well, just take it at 62. I'm going to get all the money out that I can. Well, if someone's 62 and they take Social Security, well, they can't make more than $22,320. I had a gentleman in just a few weeks ago. He thought he was going to keep working part-time, making $50,000 or $60,000 a year. And he was going to take his Social Security at 62 because he wanted to retire. And I said, well, but what are you going to do about the earnings test? If you make more than $22,320, you got to give $2 back for every dollar that they, for every $2 earned, I'm sorry, over that number, they're going to deduct a dollar. What are we going to do then? You got to be a little bit more intentional with this and making sure that you're factoring in for inflation and everything that can come at you during retirement, more so than just saying, do it at 70 or do it at 62. You got to do an optimization of your Social Security.
So Grant, how do you help people decide when's the right time to take Social Security? What information do you need to determine whether you take it at 62, full retirement age, or wait until 70?
Yeah, so all you got to do is you got to figure out what their Social Security is, index that for inflation, which we know pretty close what inflation or what it's going to be in the future, figure out what their pensions are, and then figure out, okay, what's their total assets that they have. And if someone's goal is to just have as much as they can at the end, in addition to making sure that they have the income needs that they have, obviously income need is number one. Number two is create as much wealth as they can to leave behind to a church, a charity, or their kids, or their grandkids. Well, if that's the goal, we run it all the way out to age 100, and we'll look at age 62, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all the way to 70, and see which one satisfies that goal and gives them the biggest cushion later in life where they may need additional monies for healthcare. So if it says 63 or 64, that's where we take it.
We're talking with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services, talking about creating a reliable retirement paycheck. Next one is to not neglect the implications of taxes in any income decisions that you might make.
Yeah, you have to take taxes into consideration and actually factor in for some additional taxes, because we're probably going to see an increase here in the next couple years, at least in 2026. So if you have a 401k or a traditional IRA, you pull that money out. Well, depending on how much money you have in those buckets, if you're not working anymore, if you're just pulling your traditional IRA, you have to figure in that you're going to end up paying more taxes on a portion of your Social Security benefits as well. So you have to make sure of what your provisional income in terms of the Social Security is. And then it may, you know, if you're 55 or 58 years old, it may make sense, depending on what your income is right now, it may make sense to get some of that money out of the traditional IRA into a Roth IRA over the next few years, pay the taxes now so that it doesn't affect your Social Security later.
Grant, how important is it to figure in RMD's required minimum distributions in terms of an income paycheck?
I think it's very important. A lot of times it doesn't come into play with our clients, but for the ones that they can live on their Social Security and their pension, you have to figure it out that, okay, what are we going to do to get this RMD if it's $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 per year? What are we going to do to get this out reliably rather than just rely on the stock market and then get it out in November or December? I have one client that we did this for a couple years ago. Her husband ended up in the nursing home and she wasn't wanting to deal with this anymore. So she trusted me to deal with all of their finance and all of their required minimum distribution. And we got it in a situation where we kind of did a little bit of a conversion, where we went from a situation where they were just figuring out what they had, and late in the year, they were pulling it. Just before the end of the year, we got them in a situation where we can send them a check every single month, or we could do it once a year as well, but we could send it, that check, to them every single month, knowing that we've satisfied the RMD for all of the money that they had in those retirement accounts. So I would say just doing everything intentionally, and this RMDs is definitely a part of your income plan. Some people, they go way past the RMD amount that they need, depending on how much money they have and how much income they need and how they're assets are allocated. If you have a bunch of money in Roth IRA as well as traditional, you might be taking more income from your traditional IRA that goes beyond the RMD, and just figuring that out and making sure that you know that you're not going to get any penalties is going to be the best way to go.
Grant, how can your retirement withdrawals affect your asset allocation? And what I mean by that is, you know, you're in some growth things, you're in some safety things. I mean, how do these withdrawals really affect the allocation moving forward in terms of risk tolerance?
Yeah, so I would say you have to have some money that's in a 0 to 2 year bucket in order to satisfy those incomes. And you're going to be very, very low risk in those. And it doesn't matter to me if you go with a very conservative portfolio that's in the market, if you utilize a bond portfolio, or if you utilize annuities or structured notes. Utilizing any of those very low risk type of assets, although there are times that in conservative portfolios, there's a chance that you're going to lose money as well. But taking less of a risk with those monies is going to be a much wiser route to go. If anyone that's listening, if you spend any amount of time with me, you'll know we talk about certain buckets of time, that 0 to 2 and 2 to 5, 5 to 10, and then 10 year plus money. Well, if I have an income need for these monies in the next 6 months, well, I'm not going to put that at extreme risk, no matter how confident I am in the market, because although we're confident in the market this year, we've just recently seen downturns in the market that, I mean, it wasn't on the horizon, but it happened. And you don't want to get into a situation where you need to pull money out of your retirement account if it's gone down by 3 or 4 or 5%. We don't want it to mess with you emotionally from a withdrawal standpoint. So your withdrawals definitely affect your asset allocation if you want to stay in the market completely, or if you want to split it up where you have some money out of the market that you can pull income from, and then money that's in the market for your growth. It's definitely going to affect you.
Grant, when people come to you with all the money that they've saved for retirement, and let's say that it's $500,000 for the sake of argument, maybe $600,000-$700,000, and it's a pile of money, they put it in front of you figuratively and they say, okay, Grant, this is all the money I've got. I'm 65 years of age. What would you say is the biggest obstacle that you have to overcome to create a reliable paycheck for a person that might be in retirement 25, 30 years?
Yeah, looking at inflation is going to be a big one, Jeff, is getting that reliable income and factoring for inflation. I don't think that this gets enough credit for actually planning that, okay, if we have a $100,000 income need, you know, what this is going to be 10 or 15 years down the road with no real lifestyle changes, you know, you're going to be $150,000, $160,000, $170,000 and beyond $1,000. I mean, a lot of people are flabbergasted when we show them that, hey, years down the road, you're going to need to create $200,000 of income. And they get in their mind that I've never spent $200,000 in a year in my life. Yet it's going to happen because we can't stop inflation. That is going to continue to affect our retirement, whether we like it or not.
We're talking with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services, and we're talking about creating a reliable paycheck in retirement. I'm going to add this one, Grant, is never go into retirement without an income plan.
Jeff, if you go into retirement without a plan for your income, I think that that is a very, very precarious position you might be putting yourself in. You might get into a situation where you say, you know what, I'm just going to play it by ear and it might be fine for the rest of your life, or you might be completely out of money at 78, 79, 80 years old. And that's just a risk that I would not advise anyone to take when it is so simple to put together a reliable income plan.
If you've got questions about creating a retirement income plan for yourself and you want somebody to talk to who really has no other agenda other than helping you get to where you need in retirement, I would suggest that you call Grant here at Dorhout Retirement Services. We're offering a no-cost, no-obligation, no-judgment Dorhout Retirement Blueprint. To get yours, call 402-281-0750. Just a casual conversation between you and Grant to get the questions answered that you need to put yourself on a path towards a confident retirement. Once again, that telephone number, 402-281-0750, no cost, not going to cost you a dime, and certainly no obligation. You can also request your plan online at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. That's DORHOUT RetirementServices.com.
Want more straight talk and honest answers about your wealth management and retirement journey? Stay with us. There's more Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout here. We're back with more strategies for a successful retirement. This is the Retirement Blueprint. Once again, here's Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shea.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services. Once again, if you have missed any part of the program or you want to hear any of our past shows, go to wherever you get your podcast, search for the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout. You'll find this show and all of our past shows so you can stay on top of your journey towards a confident retirement. Okay, Grant, in this part of the program, we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people are concerned with, and that is taxes. And in particular, you may have heard the term tax bombs thrown around before, but what that refers to is an abnormally large taxable event that you initiate, and it will many times put you into another tax bracket. Well, you may be thinking, I'm not a billionaire. I don't need to worry about major taxable events, right? Well, the truth is that you really do. So first of all, I want you to define for our listeners a little bit what a tax bomb really is in your estimation.
Well, I would think of it just as, okay, this is something that went off as a result of something that we did or some planning that we did that maybe we didn't expect. Or maybe it's just a circumstance of doing really well, but we maybe could have repositioned ourselves if we did it a while ago that we didn't have this. And this is going to be a really large capital gain, or this is going to be an ordinary income tax bill that it's so large that if it's not difficult to pay, at least it's difficult to stomach how much tax you have to pay. So that's the way I think about it. A tax bomb is we've created a situation that this thing goes off and there's nothing I can do about it.
And to create this tax bomb, I think if I'm hearing you correctly, Grant, it means that you have had some sort of income that has come in that has pushed you into a different tax bracket, which is setting off this tax bomb. Now, there are two different types of tax brackets. There's one that I call a cliff, in which Social Security uses, and there is sort of a progressive tax. Can you explain the difference between those two tax treatments and how they work?
Yeah, so something that's a cliff, that's very simple if you look at provisional income. And I know I say very simple. It's very simple for me. Someone that's listening is saying, what is he talking about simple? This is one of the most complicated things that we talk about is our tax system. But the provisional income from a Social Security standpoint, for instance, if we have a married filing joint couple and their provisional income numbers, and we give people this calculation all the time with their Social Security, but their provisional income, if it's over $44,000, if it's $44,001, you get to a situation where, okay, now we get to pay taxes on 85% of our Social Security, all of that. Okay, 85% of it is taxable as ordinary income versus, you know, if you had $31,999, you would pay zero tax on your Social Security in terms of a provisional income number. I guarantee you, Jeff, there is someone out there saying, there's no way I could live on $32,000. I agree, but if you had $60,000 in Social Security income and you had the rest was Roth income or income from a life insurance policy or some tax-free income, well, in that situation where you had $60,000 in Social Security, you would pay no tax on the Social Security, okay? So it's all the other assets that we have outside of it that would create that cliff for people to get over the $44,001. So proper planning can get you into a $31,999 potentially. On the flip side, if you talk about progressive, you either have your ordinary income tax bracket or you have your capital gains rates, which capital gains is going to be 0, 15, or 20. And then on your ordinary income, you're going to be 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, and 37% brackets. So I will tell you, Jeff, that if you're in the 37% bracket, there is no chance that you will pay less than 85% tax on your Social Security. But I mean, those are progressive systems versus the cliff analogy that you use.
Yeah, when it comes to the federal income tax, and I'll explain it this way, and we'll do it very simple. You're in a 10% tax bracket if you make $0 to $23,200. But let's say that you make $24,000. Well, it doesn't automatically bump you up into the 12% tax bracket. You're going to pay 10% tax on the $23,200. But that additional $800, you'll be in the 12% tax bracket. So that's what we mean by a progressive tax. So, of course, we're going to be talking about tax bombs here that could go off if you're not paying attention. One of the ways that we can get income that would trigger a tax bomb might be the sale of a home. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a client right now that they're selling some rental properties. They've written them off, they've depreciated the asset, and now all of a sudden you have a $400,000 asset and you have a cost basis of $100,000. Well, in this scenario, in this situation, we're going to have a $300,000 gain, for instance, if you sell it for $400 and your basis is $100. So that would turn into a capital gain, and then you would have to pay that capital gains tax. Now, depending on which way you go, there are ways to offset some of that, but there's no way to say that, hey, that $300,000 in gain isn't there, because if you bought it for $200 and you depreciated it down to $100 and now it's worth $400, Well, the depreciation that you use, that got you a tax benefit in previous years, so you kind of got to pay the piper now.
Talk about tax bombs with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services. Next one is rebalancing or liquidating your investments. How can that trigger a tax bomb?
Yeah, very similar to what I was just talking about in terms of what your basis is versus what your value is. If someone purchased, I have one client that I'm thinking of right now that he had purchased some Berkshire A years and years ago, back in 1994. He purchased it for, I believe it was $6,400. Well, now it's $500,000. If we sell that $500,000 stock, if we sell one share of that, well, he's going to realize that gain and he gets to pay taxes on $494,000. Well, that'd be a very significant tax bill. You don't have to do that. And I'm just giving that as an example, but inside of some of people's mutual funds, if you just got your taxes done here a couple weeks ago, if you got your taxes done and your accountant said, well, yeah, you got this 1099-R that's telling you that you have a certain amount of interest that you have to pay taxes on inside of your investment portfolio. If it's a non-qualified or non-IRA account, what you would have is they might have bought and sold inside of those mutual funds, generating a taxable gain. And it'll show that it was a distribution on your form, even though you didn't take any money out of it. So there are people that are listening to this right now, Jeff, I guarantee it, that they paid taxes on $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 that they didn't need to.
Wow.
They didn't need to, because you could have tax managed funds that would actually mitigate those taxes. And maybe not all of them, but it'll definitely be more efficient. Another way is if we rebalance, if someone has an ETF portfolio and they, let's say they have five different ETFs and each of them needs a certain percentage in that ETF in order to maintain the integrity of the model. Well, if one of them gets overweighted and another one's underweighted, they sell out of the overweighted one and buy into the underweighted one. And what you would have then is if there's a gain on that one that's sold off, well, then you're going to have to pay taxes on that because you have sold it and realized the gain. So those are a couple of things in terms of your investments and how that can affect you negatively. But there are definitely ways that you can plan for those events if you have those non-qualified investments.
Let's talk about diffusing those tax bombs or some of the ways that we can mitigate these tax bombs from actually exploding on us. Roth IRA conversions, how can that play into this conversation?
So in order to avoid future taxes, that's a way that you can do that, Jeff, is you take right now we have a lot of people that are deferring 22% income from a federal standpoint, and later on, they're probably going to pay 25% federal taxes, depending on what their overall situation is. I would say, okay, if you're in the 22% bracket right now, especially if you're in the 12% bracket, and you can pay the tax with non-IRA money, I would say consider a Roth conversion, because right now taxes are on sale and I don't think they're going to get any better. So,
no.
So you could do a Roth conversion, but you have to know that if you're going to open up a Roth IRA, then that is going to be subject to two rules for withdrawal. One is going to be the five-year rule, that you cannot take any money out of that in terms of your gains. You cannot take the gains out until after 5 years. Otherwise, there's a potential that you're going to have those gains be taxable as ordinary income, but you also can't take the money out until after you're 59 and a half. That general rule does stay in place for that Roth IRA. So that is definitely a way that you could diffuse part of your tax time bomb from your traditional IRAs, get it into a Roth.
Grant, let's say that I have some assets that have appreciated. Could be things like stocks. Could I offset the gains from that by selling losers? In other words, there's this thing called the wash sale rule. Can you explain more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can sell both winners and losers at the same time. If you have 50,000 in winners, 50,000 in losers, you can go ahead and sell those both out, but you cannot immediately go back and purchase those. Otherwise, there's a wash sale, and it basically says that if you buy that particular asset back in a specified period of time, you're not going to be able to actually get that benefit. So you have to be very careful if you're going to employ that. And that's where some of the managed funds, we have certain tax managed funds that they'll do it automatically for our clients, where it will sell something and it may buy into a very similar type of asset, but it's not going to buy the exact same one back into that particular sector. So it doesn't violate the wash sale rule. So it's a very complex process. And not all investments are going to qualify. You just have to know that as well. So pretty complicated, but there are definitely ways that we can get a lot of tax advantages or tax benefits by doing things in a little bit more unconventional way by utilizing these rules that are out there for us.
Grant, many of our listeners may have investment real estate. They're getting up there in age, mm-hmm. and maybe they're tired of toilets, tenants, and trash, and they want to divest themselves of this investment real estate, but they're worried about the capital gains pushing them into another tax bracket and triggering a tax bomb. What solutions might we offer those people?
Yeah, I would say you have to look into a 1031 exchange. We actually had someone yesterday or the day before that just called in and said, hey, what type of 1031 exchange opportunities do you have? Because they had some real estate that they wanted to get out of, like what you were just saying, someone that's tired of toilets, tenants, and trash. Well, if that's the case, you don't have to just sell it and realize the gain and then pay the taxes on it. You could have a like-kind exchange in the 1031 that if you purchase a similar asset. So if you sell a rental property and you purchase this particular type of asset in a 1031 exchange, within 180 days, you can defer the association of taxes. So you don't have to worry about that at that point. Now, at some point, you will have to, if you're going to sell that particular asset, you might have to realize it, or you could leave that particular asset to your kids, and then they would get what's called a step up in basis as of date of death, and there's a chance that they could pay zero in tax. So doing a 1031 exchange for someone that wants to get out of that real estate, out of the toilets, tenants, and trash, then you're going to have a situation where you might be having some more favorable tax treatment.
And again, with this 1031 exchange, we call it a like-kind exchange, but let's say that you've got a fourplex here in the Omaha area and you want to exchange that through the 1031. You don't necessarily have to exchange mm-hmm. it for another fourplex. I mean, it's a very loose rule, even though it's called like-kind. You can buy things like storage units or medical office buildings. There are any number of things that you can buy. And there's also this thing called the Delaware Statutory Trust. We don't have a lot of time to talk about that, but basically with a 1031 exchange, you can take those funds and you can buy fractional shares of the real estate that I have just mentioned using a Delaware Statutory Trust, which will allow you to kick that tax can down the road really indefinitely. There are ways that you can mitigate these tax bombs going off. And if you have questions that you'd like to ask Grant about this, once again, request your no-cost, no-obligation retirement blueprint with Grant. I know it's the weekend right now, you're listening to the show, but you don't have to wait until Monday to make that call. You can do it right now. 402-281-0750. Give the office a call. Leave your name and telephone number. It'll take you less than a minute to do that. And Lisa will call you back during the next business day and set you up with an appointment with Grant to talk about your needs, your wants, your goals, your desires, and answer your questions to put you on a path towards a confident retirement. Once again, there's no cost for this whatsoever. Certainly, there is no obligation. We're not going to try to sell you anything. Once again, 402-281-0750. You can also request your plan online at DorHoutRetirementServices.com, DorHout RetirementServices.com. Well, Grant, we just get started, then we're out of time for this week, so we'll get out of here. For Grant Dorhout, I'm Jeff Shade. Have a great weekend, won't you? And be sure to join Grant next week with another edition of the Retirement Blueprint right here on News Talk 1290 COYO.
The opinions voiced in the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout are for general information and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Examples provided are hypothetical and for illustrative purposes only. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. Investing in an alternative investment may only be suitable for persons who are able to assume the risk of losing a portion or all of their entire investment. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. The performance of any index is not indicative of the performance of any investment and does not consider the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Jeff Shade and show guests are not affiliated with CWM LLC.